Congratulations, you have found the Lambcast, the official podcast of the Large Association of Movie Blogs, also known as the Lamb. The Lamb is the largest collective of online movie blogs and podcasts with 2,000 members and counting. Every week on the Lambcast, various members of the Lamb community get together to talk about our favorite subject, movies. So bookmark the Lamb and follow us on social media. Be sure to join us each week to hear a lively discussion of films and movie-related talk from our members. Join the flock at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Hello, loyal listeners. Welcome to the Titan Truth Podcast, episode 245. Today's the day, maybe the last podcast I ever record, at least on this movie. I'm about to download hard evidence on something bad that's going on here. Actually, this is Lambcast number 578, and it is yet to be determined if a corporate conspiracy has delivered a dangerous load of radioactive waste or an incalculable treasure that will save the theater business. Together, loyal listeners, we'll seek the truth. In reality, I'm your host, Richard Kirkham of Kirkham A Movie A Day and the Strother Martin Film Project. My role today will be to act as referee in a battle of titans. And I don't mean the monsters from Hollow Earth, I mean our guests this week, so let's meet our combatants. In this corner, fighting out of the great state of Michigan, undefeated in 115 episodes of the MILFcast, Heather Baxendale Walsh. Heather, tap or no tap?
No tap, never. No surrender, never surrender. Never give up.
Next, from the frigid upper Midwest, in her last 33 matches, she's knocked out that many skull crawlers on her way to being the apex belly dancer of Hong Kong. From the mundane adventures of a fangirl, Jeanette Ward. Jeanette,
hell,
would you like some hand sanitizer?
Absolutely. I always use apples as distractions, so get ready.
And finally, representing the city that brought you today's movie, the home of mindless blockbusters, Oscar bait middlebrow fare, from Hollywood, California, winner of the middleweight championship of the Lambcast, from Pop Art and Rantings and Ravings, Howard Kasner. Howard, is it true that you took an HTML course at summer camp? Apparently not.
I did, but, you know, Freddie.
Yes.
Oh, actually, Jason.
Yeah, he ended the classes early.
Sounds better.
Well, the next chapter in the cinematic monsterverse pits two of the greatest icons in motion picture history against one another, the fearsome Godzilla and the mighty Kong, with humanity caught in the balance. So, friends, let's get ready to rumble!
Epic.
I danced for that. I did my coming into the arena dance. Yeah. I hope you guys felt my energy.
The down the aisle?
Yes, there you go.
The hype dance.
Yes.
We're going to start, of course, with our usual spoiler-free discussion and general impressions of the movie. Then we'll move to spoiler territory. We'll finish our discussion with some Lamb scores. And then later, of course, in the show, we'll have rantings and ravings and reviews and a game. So, Jeanette, let's start with you. What did you think of Godzilla versus Kong?
I really enjoyed it. I will say I feel like it's a Kong movie with some Godzilla in it, and I, of course, prefer a Godzilla movie with some Kong in it, but I think the reason for that is that Kong has, you know, the ape face, and you can put emotions on that face, and so you can better understand what he's thinking, what he's doing, and so that's why he gets to be the lead, whereas Godzilla's kind of second billing, which is fine, but my goodness, what fun. Definitely a movie that delivers exactly what it tells you it's going to. And I'm super happy that I didn't watch a ton of trailers, or maybe the trailers were either held up, delayed, or there was a lot in this that I either wasn't expecting or wasn't prepared for, and I loved the surprise of that. So I was very pleased with that. I did watch it on HBO Max. I really wanted to see it in the theater, but cases are spiking here, and I trust me, but not everybody else, and I'm only on my first dose of the vaccine, so I'm kind of hoping this stays in theaters for another 3 weeks so I can go once I get my second dose and feel better about it, because I would love to see it again on the big screen. But yes, I liked it. Super fun.
Nice. Howard, what did you think?
Well, if you don't care about acting or characterizations or dialogue or a clear and understandable plot.
All reason why I see a Kong versus Godzilla
right,
movie.
Like, that's what the title said, man.
Yeah, you were okay with it, but not.
No, actually, no, I couldn't
Oh,
say
okay. Go ahead.
With it. No, I mean, yeah, if you, I guess if you don't care about any of that, then it's probably the movie for you, but.
You care about those things, and so it's not the movie for you.
Right. You know, like the original King Kong, which does have characters and acting and logical plot and that sort of thing.
Yes, okay. Makes a little bit more sense. And Heather, your first feelings.
Oh, I mean, the last few movies, I've actually been preparing this month, getting amped up for it. I've been doing some prep, some motivation, because I haven't had a new release to get excited about for a bit. And, you know, I appreciate a spectacle. I love plots. I love characters. I love all those kinds of films too, but I like shit to blow up and monsters to fight and kill each other and cities destroyed. And that is exactly what I signed up for here. And that is exactly what I got. I'm not sure that there was anything else going on. Rebecca Hall was there sometimes. I like her a lot. It was good to see her. Mr. Skarsgård had a vest on and he was a nerd, and that was an interesting route for him to take for once. But, you know, that's about it as far as the plot went. And it was amazing. And I'm very lucky. I saw it from home as well. But my husband is a bit of an electronic and audiophile. So we have a home theater here, and it was shaking my house. I feared my neighbors thinking a storm was coming in or something of the like. So I got to enjoy the lovely effects to the 10th power as far as that went too, which I really appreciate, because though your state is also not so well, Jeanette, mine is the blemish of the entire country. So I'm keeping my happy butt home. I really, really, really enjoyed this. I actually, I think I enjoyed this one more than King of Monsters. But mm-hmm. I have an argument about that anyway. How do we really know that Godzilla is a he? Did somebody look up the nuclear dinosaur skirt? I don't know. Well, I would like to say Queen of the Monsters, because in some adaptations, Godzilla is a lady.
Well, I thought in the one with Bryan Cranston, she was pregnant. Is it, have I forgotten? It's been that long ago.
Is that the 94 one with the terrible P. Diddy song and
no,
such?
No.
That's the Matthew Roderick one.
One with Bryan Cranston and Juliette Binoche. I thought somehow she was pregnant, or either she could, it was one of those species that doesn't need to mate in order to
just
reproduce.
Mitosis, you know.
Yeah.
Life finds a way.
Like earthworms or something.
Howard, did you see it in a theater, or did you see it on
no.
HBO Max?
No, I saw it on HBO Max.
Oh, so that means I'm the lone person who ventured out to the theater. Me and hundreds of other people, because let me tell you, I was so happy to be in a theater, and they're still at 40 or 50% capacity, but it was a sold-out show at 50% capacity.
Wow,
and I was happy that there were a lot of people there seeing the movie. We went for the Dolby presentation, which I think was worth the extra effort. We drove extra miles to go and see it there, and the sound was maybe the best thing about the movie. I enjoyed that a lot. It was very inviting. By the way, you know, not to turn it into a business discussion, I'm going to be talking about some of that a little later, but it appears to have broken through the pandemic and created some financial success for the studio, and they may be looking at the hole in their foot where they shot themselves, leaving money on the table by opening it on HBO Max also, because this looks like it is a solid international hit, and that's why I think it will be playing in 3 weeks, Jeanette, so you'll be able to get out and see it.
Good. Excellent.
In the theater. Yeah, they did good business this weekend. It is the most successful film since the pandemic. Which it doesn't really say much, but it does say that there are people out there who want to see it. And I think the domestic box office, it was pretty impressive. Where is the number that I had? 48.5 million up through the 5 days that it had been open.
I think it made a couple of the right decisions in terms of that. Like it's tight 2 hours, just under 2 hours, which I think
yeah.
is
yeah, that
necessary.
Helped a lot.
And it really it's made for a big screen. It is literally two Titans battling and looks great on a big screen. So I think that this, in terms of a movie being chosen to be the one that can really reignite theater going, I think this is a good choice.
Yeah, and I enjoyed it for what it is. It's, you know, like we've said already, it's monsters battling on screen and a lot of mayhem that happens. And it's kind of a mess as a movie, but as a spectacle, it has a lot going for it. But we'll get into some of those details in a minute. We did mention that there are some actors missing or appearing briefly in the film. Lance Reddick has been mentioned. Kyle Chandler, I think, has about 30 seconds of screen time. I'm not sure why he was included. I noticed that we don't have Watanabe or Hawkins. I think, were they in the last one, the King of the Monsters?
Yeah, but Ken Watanabe yes. sacrificed himself to save Godzilla yeah. in the last one.
Yeah, so
it was beautiful.
Perfection.
I saw it. I just don't remember it because there was so much going on in that one. And that was one of the things that I liked a little bit better about this part of the Monsterverse, whatever we're calling it. It actually calms down between the battles, and there are some things happening that I don't know that they make much sense, but at least they're kind of interesting, and they give you some time to anticipate the next battle. I think there was a lot of overload in the previous film, and I, like I said, I barely remembered. I went back and revisited Skull Island and Godzilla, but I did not see King of the Monsters, and I remember that it was a little jam-packed. This is not quite as full, but it has a lot of stuff in it that you like. So let's talk about the things that you like the most, and then we'll talk about the things that are problematic. Heather, what did you like the most about Kong versus Godzilla?
I'm kind of with you on this one, Richard. I thought the sound was just incredible, and the most subtleties in it all. You could feel. Well, I do have surround sound in here, so I could feel myself in it. And that's one thing that that for the most part, I think most people are missing from the theater. And one of the things that I enjoyed most before we were able to experience that at home was how powerful sound actually is in a movie. I remember the first movie that really did it for me where I just went, holy crap, I mean, this is amazing. And it was Terminator Salvation. You can say what you want about that movie, but the sound in that movie is some of the best mm-hmm. sound I've ever heard in a film, period. Mm-hmm. And it really, and you have a monster movie where there really isn't a lot of plot. There isn't a whole lot going on with the characters. And what you do want to care about is your monsters and the battles. And this just amplified that and took it to the next level. The effects were excellent. Both of the expressions on both Godzilla and Kong's face were just amazing. I mean, I was sitting there like a kid with a smile on my face going, oh my God, they look real. They look real. mm-hmm. And Kong's expressions were really, really lovely. But Godzilla, you know, they are a reptilian creature of unknown providence. So we know nothing. And there's just scales and nuclear fissions simmering beneath. And still there was expression in even Godzilla's face. And not in the humorous way of the old cheesy flicks, which I actually adore. I take them for what they are. But I mean, it really, really made it just so much more enjoyable for me. I loved everything about that. And that, like I said, that's kind of what I'm signing up for here. I'm not going to get my brain wowed or change anything. This is an escapism from reality, and it delivered on that. And in doing so, they did with the effects. And they didn't cheap out with the CGI, which I get so frustrated with in films that have really, really, really good consistency with it. And then they're like, no, we're going to throw in crappy stuff here and we're going to leave it because it takes you completely and entirely out of the moment. And I didn't experience that once in this.
Okay. Howard, you're not a fan of the film. Was there anything that you were a fan of in the movie?
Well, certainly the special effects. One thing I did appreciate is as much as I enjoy the old Japanese monster films. One of the reasons you watch them is they're really cheesy. And one of the areas they're cheesy in is they use miniatures. for their cities, that for Tokyo that gets destroyed. So I really appreciated the fact that the CGI had a real city that they were destroying and not these kind of cheesy miniatures. One of my favorite little scenes from, I believe it is in Tokyo, is they've told everybody to evacuate. And then there's one scene where people are having dinner at the top of this building still. And I'm going, why are you still in this city? They told you to get out. There are these huge monsters battling. And I thought that was very funny, in a way, very clever. So I do appreciate the CGI and the battling of the monsters. I liked when they first got into the, I can't remember what they called it, but the underworld where King Kong comes from. It was very beautifully rendered, and that was one of the few emotional moments I had, where King Kong is just so happy to be home. The only actor I really liked was a Julian Dennison, who plays Madison's best friend. He is from The Hunt for the Wilder People, or whatever the name of that.
I think that's the right name.
Yeah. He has all the best lines. He delivers them the best. He's I think he gives the only performance, actually, in the whole movie. And I also did find it interesting that this movie is actually driven by alpha women.
Oh, yeah.
And that the men are beta men. Not better, but beta men. And I did find that interesting. I did have some other issues, though, with the ethnicity of some of the casting. But I did think that was very interesting.
Jeanette, how about some favorites for you?
We're behind the spoiler wall, yeah? Clearly.
Well, I think we're still in front of the wall. We have a couple of things that are surprises that we probably should hold off on for a moment. Is that okay? What you like the best?
No, seconding what Howard mentioned about the Hollow Earth, that is gorgeous and was very interesting. It's super well done. I love that. Yes, again, the expressions on Kong's face. The reason the original King Kong is regarded as a classic film as opposed to some of the original Godzilla movies recognized as great movies is because, again, the King Kong himself is sympathetic and you feel for him and you can get involved in him as a character. Always easier when it's a practical effect. So in these, it can be very tough to get to feel an emotional connection with an entirely CGI character, especially a giant ape. But again, the expressions on Kong's face, you can, and the communication factor, giving him another layer of personality, a way to feel for him. Seeing King Kong in chains in any movie is devastating.
Yes. Always
devastating, because the ability to put sadness on his face breaks your heart when you see him in chains. So I think that was really well done. Yes, I prefer Godzilla, but it's harder to get, like Heather said, he's a big lizard. It's harder to get deep emotions across that face. But I appreciate, in going back and kind of looking at this for a second time, anytime you get a close-up on one of their faces during battle and something is happening and it's a reaction shot, the game you can play with yourself of trying to guess what they're saying is super fun, because if the emotion is played across the CGI face correctly, you can guess what they're thinking and what they're doing. And so I really appreciate that. I think that was very well done. I like that they embiggened Kong from Skull Island to this movie, which, again, they worked into the plot of Skull Island, saying, oh, he's still growing, which, knowing that that was in the 70s, then obviously he's super big here. Just, I think they say just 350, 360 feet, whereas Godzilla is a full 400 feet at this point. So I like that they think about that kind of stuff. Having Lance Reddick's one line is, we've evacuated Hong Kong. Well, okay, great. So watching them smash around in Hong Kong and through all the buildings is super fun. I like that. One of my problems with Godzilla King of Monsters, which I loved that movie, but there were way too many people in it, and we spent way too much time with the people. It's called King of the Monsters. Please just have it be monsters. This movie was a little better in that they tightened up the cast, but there's still probably more people than we need in a monster movie. We don't really need to be paying attention to all of these characters and what they're doing, but they did tighten it up in that you had three pockets of people that you were paying attention to, and I think that was better, an improvement than the previous one. So yeah, I certainly, because in the last one I was really, why was Millie Bobby Brown even in it? She was useless. In this one, she's still kind of useless, but pairing her with Julian Dennison, he was great, and so that made them a little more watchable. I like Brian Tyree Henry as the crazy monster podcast guy. I think
he
that was
super fun.
Super fun. So, yeah, overall, really enjoyed it. I feel like Rebecca Hall and Alexander Skarsgård were kind of the bleh, like they were real boring. So, whatever they are. But, yeah, I like that they, I believe, because it says that the actress who played the deaf girl, it comes from a deaf family. It doesn't say that she's actually deaf, so I'm going to assume that she's deaf. So that was kind of a nice addition. I enjoyed her. Damien Bashir as kind of the big bad, great. Chewing all the scenery, very, very evil. Mustache twirling. Yeah, there was a lot in this that I enjoyed.
All right. Well, I like I already said, I liked the sound design of the movie, probably the best thing. I thought, interestingly enough, that made one of the moments when there was absolute silence one of the better moments, and that's the one where the little girl is on the deck of the ship and Kong is roaring, and but they show it from her perspective, and you really get her perspective because you don't hear anything. And I thought that that was a nice 15 seconds in the movie that kind of puts us in that character in the moment, and we could see how she might focus more on all of the other things that Kong brings to the table instead of the fierceness that's going on there. I think that's an interesting take on it. Of course, I'm probably reading much more into it than was actually there. You mentioned the character played by Brian Tyree Henry. He's a little quick at times. I'm missing lines, which I hate happening, but I know that that's part of the kind of staccato delivery that's amusing for his character. He's the, you know, ADD, anxious kind of person. He's primarily the comic relief along with Julian Dennison as Josh. Those are the two characters that are the most fun other than the monsters in the movie. And I would completely agree. Millie Bobby Brown didn't have anything to do in the previous film, and in this movie she had nothing that was important to do, but at least she was in the story occasionally, and it moved things along a little bit, which was okay. I was fine with that. Yeah, Skarsgård and Rebecca Hall have the thankless roles that Watanabe and Hawkins had before, where they kind of stand in the background and try to do some exposition and not get in the way of the monsters fighting each other. And for the most part, they stayed out of the way reasonably well. The things that are likable about this movie we've talked about for the most part. The spectacle that's going on there, there's a little bit of humor. That line that you mentioned from Lance Reddick, I did not realize, because I'm looking at Hong Kong being wiped out, and I'm going, where are all the people? And I'm going,
yeah.
I'm glad they're not all there, because holy criminy, the number of people dead would match the amount of dollars that they brought in on opening weekend. It's just depressing to think about. I started freaking out about those kinds of movies after 9/11, and got a little depressed with the Superman film, Man of Steel. But this one feels, there's so much artifice in it. It's shot in such a way. We'll talk about some of the things that are a little bit of drawback in a second. I don't want to get into that too much right at the moment. But I didn't have that same kind of feeling of being depressed about the number of people dying, because you don't see any people. There's one scene of people running down a stairwell, and that's about as much as you see of anybody in Hong Kong. The rest of the time, somehow they managed to get the millions of people out of Hong Kong just in time. I'm going, they must have a much better ferry service than I have seen any place else in the world. That can't possibly be the case.
Well, they live in a world where Titan attacks are a regular occurrence, so they're prepared.
Or maybe they got on that Elon Musk transporter that goes underground, you know, and shoots you through like
That's
a pneumatic
right.
tube.
From Florida to Hong Kong in, I don't know, 2-3 hours?
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, faster than Godzilla can go around South America to get there.
The science is sound.
Yeah, well, we'll pick at the movie a little bit more later on then. Okay, well, let's talk about those things that are a little problematic, and I'm going to start this time because you guys have said something that I thought was kind of interesting. You like the CGI and the battles and how realistic they all looked. To me, I like the fights. I think the idea it's shot in a way that you can see and understand what's going on, unlike Transformers movies where you have no idea what's going on. Mm-hmm. But it still seemed to me like they were just better looking guys in rubber suits. And the miniatures are nicer looking, but they still look like miniatures to me. That battle in Hong Kong just felt to me like it was an improved CGI version of the same kinds of things that we got in those 1960s Toho films. And I didn't have a problem with that. I just thought it was, you know, cheesiness done on a bigger budget. And I thought they moved like guys in suits a mm-hmm. lot of the time. And I was okay with that, too, because that's kind of, you know, what we're looking at, monsters crushing things and battling each other.
I think that's a really important point. I think that's one of the reasons, one of the many reasons, the 1998 Matthew Broderick Godzilla, which Lance Reddick was in for some reason. I think that's one of the reasons that one didn't work as well is the CGI of the Godzilla in that. They were like, oh, we're going to make him look like a big iguana. But when the nostalgia effect of these monster movies is remembering the guys in the suits, they need to look like guys in suits.
A little bit.
Yeah,
so
I think so.
Feel like that's a huge, a nice factor of these. So I think you pointing that out is key. I agree with you.
Well, other things that you guys saw as being maybe drawbacks, other than the script and the actors and, you know, the dialogue and that sort of thing.
Well, I mean, that's really kind of, I mean, small things, you know, but it's one of those things, and I felt this way about King of Monsters as well. It's, okay, there's these characters, and other than Ken Watanabe, I really didn't care about anybody in that movie at all. In fact, I wanted most of them to die because I thought they were so stupid. Mm-hmm. And when you want to sacrifice your main characters and they're not getting sacrificed, it's a disconnect from the experience of the movie. And if you are on such a superficial level experiencing it that way, then you have to have characters that you immediately connect into if you're going to use them as nothing more than minimal plot devices. And the only character I had any kind of real connection with was the big bad Walter Simmons. He was wonderful in every single scene he was in. I was completely eyes on him. I wanted to know everything he said and everything he did. He was a fantastic villain. Mm-hmm. And everyone else, I didn't care anything that was really happening to them. I did like the little girl. The little girl was great. But I think that was also just more because everybody else was so lackluster. And you had a lot of people with great, great personalities and are wonderful actors. So yeah, when they are put in peril, I don't care if they survive or not. That's not good.
Well, I did like the fact that Walter Simmons and his daughter both go almost instantaneously in a way that seems completely appropriate for the movie.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
You know, one gets crushed by their own invention and the other gets crushed by the one that they are using. And, you know, I'm sorry, we shouldn't feel joyful that people are being wiped out in this situation.
No, I disagree.
Enjoy.
In a movie like this, you want to see the bad guys get it.
You want them to pay.
The villain who's responsible for all of this crap gets squished. That's what you want in these movies.
I'm with you. There needs to be some kind of price that they have to pay for all of this destruction and all of this evil. And it's so exaggerated that it's you know, it's a balanced reaction, I think.
Absolutely. I will, again, I feel like Rebecca Hall and Skarsgård, those two characters were useless to the point where you have Kyle Chandler in the movie and he's doing nothing but running from place to place. His character could have handled all the stuff they were doing. You didn't have to add the two of them.
Nope.
I don't remember if Bradley Whitford got killed in King of Monsters or not, but I feel like he could have been...
Oh, he was so fun in that.
He should have been doing all the stuff they gave to Skarsgård in this, because he was the one character in the last movie talking about the Hollow Earth. So I don't understand why he wasn't the Skarsgård bit of this. I don't know why they bothered bringing in those two characters. I found them both incredibly boring and useless. But you know, what are you going to do?
Well, Rebecca Hall's character is supposed to be the one who's gotten through with the communication, and it appears that she is really just glomming on to her ward's ability to communicate. I know
exactly.
That it felt a little bit strange that
she's a glorified babysitter.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you give that to Millie Bobby Brown? Based on what she's been through in the previous two movies? One movie. Why isn't she the one in that role, doing that stuff?
That would make a little more sense.
Would make a little more sense. You didn't have to add somebody new. You had a pile of people you're trying to shove in this movie. Use them better.
Yes.
Howard, do you want to take your axe to something?
Well, I'm almost a little hesitant to say this. I did have a problem with the casting in a different way than people have. I'm going to be honest. It really bothered me that the bad guys, the only real bad guys were Hispanic or Latinx, and that the main black character is a joke and harks back to the 1930s and 40s portrayal of comic relief with black characters. And the good guys are about as white as white as white as white can be. And
except for the little girl.
Except for the little girl. I don't understand in this day and age why that is. You have the Marvel comic universe that's telling you, and the Disney universe that's telling you, you don't have to do this. You can really mix things up. But yeah, I did not get that.
I did think about the thing that you mentioned about Brian Tyree Henry's character, thinking, you know, this is a little bit of, you know, step and fetch it kind of humor that's going on here. On the other hand, it reminded me a bit like Michael Peña from the Marvel movies, doing the kind of riff on what's going on and adding a little bit of humor. And I wouldn't want those characters to not be ethnically diverse, but I certainly don't want them to be based on stereotypes. I do think that that might be problematic.
It's tough because I feel like that character of the paranoid podcast guy, it would be very easy to cast a white nerd in that role. So casting a black nerd in that role, is that better? Is it not better? That's a really tough call on that one. Rebecca Hall and Skarsgård, they are the whitest of white people. And again, I found those two characters so pointless. And yeah, that was to have them there. It's unnecessary to begin with, but to have the two air quotes heroes also be very, very white, not necessary. And knowing that, and I, in reading some of the, like, give me a little more about this movie, Zhang was in the previous movie and was supposed to be in this movie again. Why was she not the lead? Why didn't she have the lead role in this?
Yeah, exactly. I'm not sure my problem so much is that the bad guys are Hispanic and the clown is black, as all the good guys are just white, including Kyle Chandler, who represents white middle class suburban, you know, that's what he plays, you know. So
that's his bread and butter.
Yes.
Right. So if they had really, as you say, if it wasn't Rebecca Hall, if it had been an Asian character, you know, that would have been much more interesting. If Millie Bobby Brown had been an ethnic character, that probably would have helped a lot too. It just, to me, showed a lack of imagination. And what gets me is they can't possibly have the excuse as we had to cast people that would bring in the audience. Because I'm sorry, as good as Alexander Skarsgård and Rebecca Hall and Kyle Chandler are,
they're not drawn.
They don't bring in.
I forget Rebecca Hall's name every single time I see her. I have to look her up every day. You know what she reminds me of? If you watched Arrested Development, when Michael continued to forget the name of George Michael's girlfriend and he referred to her as her, that is Rebecca Hall for me. I never remember her name.
Okay, I love Rebecca Hall, but that's exactly how I feel about Kyle Chandler. So
there you go, same thing.
Exactly. I was just going to say that. I'm like, I know him. I recognize his face, but he is that generic white guy
that
Kai and I are always talking about, and I never know. I'm like,
I don't remember his name. I think of him as early edition guy. That's all I think of him as. And that's because the Friday Night Lights thing, I'd never watched any of that. So all I think of him as is the guy who got the paper the day before.
Not only that, you know, Rebecca isn't American.
Right. So why is she playing American?
Right. I mean, she didn't have to. It's not an American role. There's nothing about it where she has to be American. So why not let her use her British accent? I mean,
I agree with that.
Well, and that's the thing is, and I think Jeanette nailed it the best, is, okay, I like both Alexander Skarsgård and Rebecca Hall, and they're both very charismatic actors. But their characters had no purpose here. There was no reason for them to be here. So you not only have two characters that we don't care about at all and are not necessary, but then you cast them as practically translucent people. So it's just problematic across the board.
Yep.
There's no purpose in them being there.
Yeah, and I think it's made so much worse by the knowledge of what it could have been. Like, we knew Zee Zhang was in the previous one. Why do we not have her here? And so, yeah, it's the double whammy of bad choice, but when the potential for better choices were there.
Well, they developed that monarch idea early on in the first couple of these movies, and then it basically disappears.
You know,
monarch becomes this side issue that isn't really the agency that's doing anything or actively engaged in this. They are reactive only, and that just seems a little strange.
Right, because Bashir's company, Damien Bashir?
Yes.
Am I saying that right? Bashir. His company is called Apex, so why was that not Monarch and using some of them from the... But again, whatever. Oh, going back to things I like, because I was slow on this, the credit sequence. I love a credit sequence that catches you up to speed with what happened in previous movies. The opening credit sequence in this movie does that. Flashes of the previous movies to catch you up. And then literally forming a bracket of Godzilla and Kong. Love that. Thought it was
great.
That
was fun. That was
fun. But of course, we don't get to see the Kong bracket very well. Other than Skull Crawlers, I'm not exactly sure what was on there.
It was implied there was more.
Yes. Well, I, you know, in defense of Kyle Chandler, I guess, you know, as the middle-class white guy on the show here, I thought he was fine in the previous movie. I just kind of like the fact that he's in the movie finally with Kong again, because he was in the Peter Jackson King Kong.
That's right.
Yeah. Oh, he was. Right. Yeah, good.
So, you know, the circle is complete that way. But other than, like I said, he literally has maybe a minute of screen time, and most of it is just, you know, worrying about Millie Bobby Brown.
Yeah.
Not even providing any exposition. He could have been completely absent from the movie. Or,
and,
like you
who
said...
who was she living with, and who was in charge of her? And I'm sorry, as a parent, I'm going, I know that she's, like, you know, tried to save the world before and stuff, so she probably has autonomy to be alone for periods of time, but it appeared she was in high school.
Yes, there you go. She's not in college, she's in high school.
Yeah, mom is FUBAR, and... Dad is off again. Didn't we learn what happens from leaving her alone? Bad things.
See, that's why she should have been playing the Rebecca Hall part and being like, I am now a scientist who lives on Skull Island.
I don't think she would have just been in high school. And that was, it was a stupid thing. And because it was a stupid thing, it distracted me. Mm. Yeah, I didn't like that either. It was just nonsense.
Howard, do you have other items? Because I think we all agree with you on that one.
Just outside the usual things like the script, the plot.
Yes.
characterizations.
Well, I want to talk about the plot, but I need an official, like, yes, spoiler wall down.
I was just going to say, at this point, I think we can safely say that the spoilers are about to come. If you are listening to the show and haven't seen the movie yet and want to remain uninformed before you see the movie, then come back and listen to the second half of the show after you've seen the movie. We're going to go full bore into spoiler territory here. We're tearing down the wall. We're breaking through the gate. We're crushing into the center of the earth. Time for spoiler talk. And Jeanette, I know you had something that you wanted to mention.
Yes. Okay. So I love that there's a Mechagodzilla in this, and I did not know there was a Mechagodzilla in this. I'm not sure how I missed that. I'm sure it was publicized somewhere, but what a treat!
I didn't know either. It was a surprise to me, too. Yep.
Loved it. Super happy. Mechagodzilla, yay! also, here's my thing about, and yes, Howard is right, the plot is, it doesn't need to be in a movie like this. I don't need a ton of plot, but when you start to pretend like you have one, then I'm going to start to question it. So I am curious, and maybe they're trying to build up to another movie, and that's great. I'm happy for them. Because they say that Mechagodzilla, Bashir's Apex company, creates Mechagodzilla because they think, well, surely the only way to protect us from Titans is to create one of our own. Sure, science is sound. Great idea. They decide to do it.
Are you questioning science?
No, the science is always sound. I never question it. They do it by the tag at the end of King of the Monsters was Charles Dance's character, or somebody's character, finding one of the heads of King Ghidorah. King Ghidorah had three heads. They find the one that Godzilla ripped off and discarded. So they say that in this one, Mechagodzilla is operated by Shinigori's character, who is, again, name could be anything, but his character has a psionic link, and when Brian Tyree Henry's he's with the two kids, they take an underground tram from Florida to Hong Kong. They find this dude in the, he says, okay, King Ghidorah had a psionic link. The three heads mentally communicated with one another. This is one of the heads. The other head is inside the Mechagodzilla. And he literally, there's a line, because I had to go back and check. And the third one could be, and then they get interrupted and something else happened. So, am I the only one who picked this up? Where is the third head? Is that going to come back later? Is it not important? Am I spending too much time thinking about this?
I'm sure it's coming back later because that was that whole other character, that end of the other movie plot line. There's something going on there. And that wasn't Damien Bashir's company that they were talking about. It was some other group that was going on, some terror type group. And yeah. So I'm sure that that'll be the link in the next film, whether or not it's Mechagodzilla or something else. There'll be.
There wasn't a post credit sequence, right? Streaming is it insists you go to watch something else and doesn't let you go all the way through the credits.
I hate those. There's a way to get around it, but it does. You are correct. It's tough to get to that. No, we sat through. There wasn't. I don't remember.
There wasn't
something.
Anything post credit that I saw. Yeah, I had it on.
I didn't either. I sped up to the very once the credits started after a certain point. Yeah. I sped it up to the very end to make sure there wasn't. And
all right, so I was the only one thinking about, well, where's that third head? Maybe I'm not the only one. Maybe someone else is, and maybe we'll see in the next. But yes, I appreciate that Mechagodzilla and that they at least try. They at least try to say, oh yeah, well, the psionic link in the DNA between this skull and what they put in that monster. Which, again, gives you kind of a, oh, what? This guy just got fried, and now Mechagodzilla is out there on the loose. You could kind of make the leap that, well, King Ghidorah's DNA psionic link is still in there, and now it's reacting to seeing Godzilla and, boom, fight. But it's a bit of a leap.
Well, I think that's the whole implication there, is that the Ghidorah's DNA takes over and fries the brain of the driver. That was the other thing that I was going to complain about the movie, and again, there are spoilers here. It felt to me like I was watching Thor and Harry Potter at the same time, because we get, you know, battling streams of blue and, you know, red going into each other, and you know, cool. One's going to, you know, I'm going, okay, is Voldemort going to win this time, or is Harry going to win? And then we've also got Godzilla. No, I mean Thor. I mean King Kong with his mighty axe coming in to wield it and save the day. And I'm going, this is. I mean, I know these films are a mishmash of a variety of things, and it's monsters beating up on each other, but that felt a little lazy to me.
I don't know that I needed a Kong temple-type thing in the center of Hollow Earth in which they used to do what... Like, he couldn't just find a loose Godzilla scale and make his own axe. That was a little, like, what? But
It was a little sword in the stone, a little bit.
A little bit.
Yeah, but I think, too... And, I mean, it does kind of make sense, and they were consistent with the fact that, and I think if anyone saw any of the memes beforehand, the picture of a silverback gorilla, the meme is, guys, I'm going to do the best I can, but it's an effing nuclear dinosaur.
Right.
and throughout, Kong was, from the boat scene, which Godzilla also, you know, had the advantage being able to swim. Right. From that scene, which was actually quite stressful for me, I kept going, he's going to drown. He's not going to drown.
Too early in the movie.
and it was quite early on. But from there on out, there's this feeling that Godzilla is stronger than Kong and bigger than Kong and all of these things. And also seems to know a little bit more than what's going on. Kong seems a little bit more driven towards not battling, not caring about the everything that's happening on Earth.
Just
wanted
to be alone on his island.
Yeah, which I'm with Kong. That's what I want to do. That's my goal. So
I've been that way for a year.
Yes. So for him to be able to actually come back and balance out Godzilla and be even matched, giving him the axe, yes, it's quite ridiculous to have his nuclear power. Like, how is that even connected? But let's just go with it. Fine. To have him powered up to be even more Super Axe Kong. I mean, it's outrageous, but I thought it was fun.
And by the way, all the architecture and structure in the Hollow Earth, are we talking aliens?
See, that's why the whole temple thing was not necessary, because I was like, did ancient Kongs build this?
That didn't seem like it was likely or probable, but...
Yes, they have intelligence, but I didn't think on that scale.
Yeah.
But then again, they made a nuclear-powered axe, apparently, so...
Yeah.
But again, it's just picking up a Godzilla scale and tying it to a stick. Let's not give them a ton of credit on that one.
Fair.
I feel rather sorry for the screenwriters, because they have to do so much that they have so little control over. They have to continue mythology from previous films... They have to set up things for future films, and then they have to have these other plots, and there are so many plots, and there's so much going on, when it's always best to have as simple a plot as you possibly can for movies like this, but it just gets so complicated. It's very hard to write, and they didn't seem to have the skill of something like Avengers Endgame and Avengers Age of Ultron, which is... Those writers had to do the same thing as well. They had to take all this mythology from before. They have to have this plot going on, these plots going on, and then they have to make sure they can set up for future stories. And one of the differences is that in many ways, in Age of Ultron and Endgame, it's a very simple plot. Mm-hmm. You just got to defeat this guy. And everything's going to go back to normal. And that's it. There's really, and that gives you plenty of time to create character, to create witty and vibrant dialogue. And you can have all this special effects and battling of superheroes. And that's where I think this film really went wrong. Just get a simple plot. You want King Kong and Godzilla to fight each other. It doesn't matter too much why. You can come up with something. But just don't make it this complicated. The only interesting thing I thought about the plot is that you wonder who's going to win, King Kong versus Godzilla. And from an audience standpoint, how do you choose? Because someone's going to get upset. So the cleverest thing I think they did was introduce, in a way, Mecha Godzilla, so that at the end, King Kong and Godzilla
team up,
defeat Mecha Godzilla, and they go their separate ways. And
yes,
this is about the only time I thought Godzilla had any kind of emotion, where at the very end, he sort of says, I'm done with this. I'm out of here.
back to the ocean.
Until 3 years from now, when we have a new threat.
Right.
Yes, exactly. I feel like you're very right in that it could have used a simpler plot, and the bones of that simpler plot were there, because basically, in theory, Apex is like, I'm tired of these Titans. We're building a mechanical Titan with these pieces we found. That mechanical Titan, activating it, aggravates Godzilla. Godzilla attacks. The Monarch people are like, oh, well, Godzilla's out of control. We need Kong. Bring in Kong. Set Kong on Godzilla. But in the meantime, Mechagodzilla gets loose, and now they both have to fight him. That is the bones of a simple plot, but then they try to overcomplicate it with a bunch of other things. So
yeah, we're finding this new energy source, which I never really quite understood.
Still not clear.
And do they find
what do they need the new energy source for? They've already drilled through the earth and created these hyper-fast chambers, and my gosh, the technology required to build that enclosure for Kong on Skull Island.
Right?
I think they got it covered.
We
didn't even mention the fact that they're Truman showing Kong.
Yes, there you go.
I know.
I mean, theoretically, the ending should be after they fight and leave out all this energy stuff. Is returning Kong to his home. Those should have been the final scenes. They shouldn't have been in the middle.
Yeah. Like, boy, Skull Island is suddenly too tiny for this giant, giant Kong. What if we find this Hollow Earth place and get him there? In the meantime.
Which is where he came from.
Exactly. Yeah.
Which apparently Godzilla can just shoot a giant hole down to, so they have a quick, easy access out of there.
Felt like they came out of nowhere.
And you can shout at each other through the hole.
Gravity inversion before, and now Godzilla could just shoot a hole through it?
Yeah. We can get into things like, you know, for Godzilla to have all that energy and everything, he'd probably have to eat every fish in the ocean. Or how is he still around? Because you have to have two Godzillas to produce a third Godzilla, and you have to have
reproduce asexually, as we may not have discovered.
Yes, if they are able to do that on their own, then
but then you have King Kong, who apparently he's the last one. And to have a species survive, it's really hard to have it if you just have even two, a male and female. You have to have a very large number. I mean, the big joke about Loch Ness and the Yetis is that you just can't have one Loch Ness monster.
Right.
Yeah.
You have to have like 10 or 20 or 30 if you're going to keep a species alive. So,
I too,
cares about that.
coming off of that too, this is one of the things that I did like. One of the questions I got that could be for future films also was because of Hollow Earth was, what the hell else is living down there? And did all the big Titans come up, or are there still some down there? How big is it? How vast is it? We just went to Kong's house because they got lucky and it was fine. But all of that. So I love all of those questions and all of the possibility that's there and the mystery still. And that's something that you do want from a movie like this. You want that sense of, there's other stuff that we don't know.
What could be next?
Mm-hmm. Fine.
I appreciate that the end, Kong and Godzilla team up out of necessity and part as
frenemies.
Not friends, not partners, but acknowledging the skill and honor of the other with like a head nod and then slow roll into the ocean. So I appreciate that, the fact that they didn't get chummy, but they respect one another.
Yeah, at least we were spared the high five at the end as Godzilla goes off into the water.
Terrible and probably entertaining. I did for when they, again, I hate seeing King Kong in chains. It's why I can't deal with any of the King Kong movies. But when they're like, we got to take him to Antarctica. He's going to lead us through the Hollow Earth portal. I, for the longest time, did not grasp that the portal was on Antarctica and kept thinking, that is a terrestrial Titan. He can't lead you through a hollow earth if the entrance is underwater. It took me a while to figure out, you have to get onto Antarctica.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But again, that's probably more plot than this movie needs. I don't need to be thinking about that.
No, no, you shouldn't be.
Because Godzilla clearly just swim through the Hollow Earth whenever he wants. That's his deal.
Yeah, there's another exit somewhere.
Apparently they're easy to make, if you're Godzilla.
I wanted to see more of the monsters from the previous movie. That crazy woolly mammoth monster thing.
Yes!
That giant tarantula deal. All those guys.
Well, we'll have to write that sequel, you know, put it together.
I'm sure
for
someone
it.
Already has.
Yes. I'm sure they have plans. And I'm happy with the success of the movie just for the theater business. And I don't mind that there's another one of these going to be coming down the road. That's okay. Any other final thoughts on these, on this particular movie? Let's kind of just go through the motions on this. Heather, final thoughts about Godzilla vs. Kong?
I mean, it's exactly what I wanted and needed. It was a spectacle. It was an escape from day to day. It couldn't be more absolutely ridiculous, and I thought it was a good time. This is the kind of movie you want to go see in the theater. It's an experience.
All right. And you know what? I should ask also for the Lamb score. So have you got a Lamb score for us?
Yeah. I'm going to give it 3.5 out of 5. It was fun.
All right. And Jeanette, how about you? Final thoughts on a Lamb score?
Yeah, super fun, delivers what it promised, a little more complicated than it need to be, but honestly, I feel like I expected that, so I'll give it a 4 out of 5. Super fun.
And Howard, how about you?
Well, I'm going to end with a quote.
Okay.
From Alonso Duraldi of The Wrap. He said that the franchise had given up on everything but the monster fights. Yes, obviously no one goes to these movies for the deep human characters or for plot machinations or even for the metaphors about the environment and industrialization. Here's the thing, though. They come in handy to fill in the gaps between the monster battles, and you miss them when they're not there. And since even those battles are somewhat perfunctory, what are we even doing here? So I think that sort of sums up my feeling, and I'm giving it a 2.
I will second that. The fact that the previous movie had a lot of environmental overtones, I wish this one had that.
And I miss Ann Darrow and Carl Denham. I did like the call out to Denham University. I thought that was kind of cute. I think you need those kinds of characters to make the movie interesting when the monsters aren't on screen. And they can't be on screen all of the time because... then you'll have King of the Monsters, which is just frantic nonsense. That movie irritated me. This one...
I agree with you.
This one did not irritate me. It entertained me while I was watching it, and that's all I need, and I'm just glad that other people were entertained and went to the movies, so it gets a little bit of extra... jolt from me because it's succeeding at doing what we need to have done right now, so I'll give it 3 lambs. Mm-hmm. All right, well, that closes our discussion of Godzilla vs. Kong. Hopefully it'll be around for a few weeks. Those of you who want to see it in a theater, please go see it in a theater. HBO Max is fine, but it's not going to be the same. Nobody's going to remember years from now their visit to the couch to watch a movie. They're going to remember their visit to a theater to watch a movie. So go to the movies, people. We'll be back right after these words from a fellow Lamb Podcasting Network show.
Why This Film Podcast looks back at the movies of your childhood. Join me, Emily Slade, each week as I step back in time to revisit the films that you grew up with. Maybe you haven't seen it for a while. Maybe you've watched it every day since you were 8. Maybe you totally forgot it existed. Whatever the movie, I'm here to go back with you through nostalgia untold and memories unnumbered. Together, we'll ask, why this film?
If I were the man I was 5 years ago, I'd take a flamethrower to this place!
And it's time once again for rants, raves, and reviews of the week. Heather, let's start with you. What have you got to rant, rave, or review about this week?
I just had a rant in my head and I lost it. I must be feeling quite pleasant. That was a lovely conversation. I remember. Okay. It's a silly little one. I've been a tidbit less patient with technology lately, and it seems like I feel like everything is breaking all the time. Nothing works smoothly anymore. You can't call anywhere, make an appointment. You can't do anything, just basic human things. So one of the things I've been participating in on Sunday nights is playing Among Us with some friends of mine. We get on Discord, we play for a couple hours, we lie to each other, we kill each other, we stab each other. It's, you know, what all great friendships are based on. So it's a fairly simple, small game, and they just did an update on it and brought in a brand new map, which I was super excited about, and I can't play it because it's broken. So for a week. Now, in fairness, too, I've really been too busy to play, so it's maybe a blessing in disguise. But I'm not the only person experiencing this. It's mostly Android people. So I would really, 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 really like it if they fixed it so I could at least play with my friends again. I'd like to stab them. I'd like to kill them. I'd like to lie to them. It's silly.
All right. We need a tech fix here.
Yeah.
Somebody write some code. Howard, how about you? You ranting, you raving, you reviewing?
I will be raving. First, I got my first COVID shot. So,
hooray!
Yay. I'm going to rave a bit about my favorite streaming platform, and that is Criterion Channel. They have added two sections that are very exciting. One is the Marx Brothers. They have about 10 Marx Brothers films, a couple I haven't seen. The Marx Brothers are... Their movies I go to when I, you know, they're great to go to if you're feeling sort of unhappy or down or depressed. They always cheer me up. The second one is they added a section for Ennio Morricone, and I was able to see a movie I have not been able to see since it first opened, I think back in the 1970s, and that is The Bird with the Crystal Plumage. I finally got to see that again. So... doing very happy with movies.
Once again, the Criterion Channel comes through for you. Excellent.
Yeah.
And Jeanette, what are you ranting, raving, or reviewing?
Well, I am raving about Falcon and Winter Soldier. I hate to be predictable. I don't. I like being predictable. That's what I live for. it's wonderful. And it feels like a tiny movie every week in that the action is great. The action was incredible. This past week's episode, and you know, just the right touch of humor, the right touch of fun, the right touch of just enough seriousness, and then just action like I feel like I've been missing lately. So yeah, just like it.
I'm glad that you're enjoying it. I've been watching it on a week by week basis. I watched the third episode right before the show, and I'm enjoying it, but I'm not nearly as satisfied with it as I would like to be. I'm kind I keep hoping something is going to push it over the edge, and I feel like there's something coming, and we haven't quite got there yet.
Honestly, I feel like it's kind of building.
Yeah, I hope that that's the case. I hope that that's the case, and not just that we're seeing individual episodes that are supposed to be self-contained, but aren't quite... as satisfying. I like the idea of something building, but that's just me. You know, and by the way, I keep referring to it as Falcon and the Snowman. I can't stop doing that. And it irritates my daughter.
I continue to refer to it as Falcon and Winter Soldier, and there are thes in there, and they make them very clear in the title sequence, but I'm not going to use them.
Well, my... Rave this week is based on the box office performance of our feature film today. Legendary Films has been negotiating with Warner Brothers about all of the things that Warner's has planned on doing with their HBO Max releases during the year, and apparently they're still arguing about Dune, and there is a chance now because of the success of Kong versus Godzilla, or Godzilla versus Kong, let's get it in the correct order, that Dune may not debut day and date on HBO Max, that it may be a theatrical release for an exclusive window, and I find that exciting. I want that to be the case. Look, streaming is great for a lot of people, I understand that, and eventually some people are going to have access issues. We want everybody to see all the movies that they want to be able to see, but the theater business has to, I mean, it relies on the notion that there is something unique for mm-hmm. them that they are offering. And if they don't have that for a period of time, that business will it'll simply turn into, you know, the roadshow edition of a Broadway play. They'll have all the big shows playing in the theater, and that'll be all there is because they can't afford to do anything else. And I don't want that to happen. So go to the movies, let's make them successful, and let's have continued theatrical releases, folks. I hope that Legendary works this out, and Warner Brothers sees the wisdom of it. They're still advertising it on HBO Max that Dune will be on their schedule later this year. But you know what? The world changes on a daily basis, and that would be a change that I would be okay with. That's just my opinion. You could, of course, have a different one.
It's the step closer to normal. And not normal, normal, but a new normal. I think, for me, the thing I'm most excited about once I get fully vaccinated is feeling comfortable going back to a movie theater. That's
yes.
what I want. That's what I miss
yes.
the most. That's me what I miss
too,
the most. I yes, having dinner with my friends, but also sitting in a movie theater by myself with a crowd full of strangers reacting to an experience together. That's what I really miss. So, yeah, I agree with you.
I do too.
Well, good. Good. I'm glad there's some support out there for that idea. Howard's got the game for us this week, so Howard, I'm going to turn it over to you for a few.
Great. Well, what is the most important word in... Gee, what was the name of the movie we just saw? I never remember. Godzilla versus Kong?
Yes, there you are.
Versus.
Yes,
that's right. So that's the aim of the game today. I am going to be listing the year of a movie and give you a description of the movie. And it is something or someone versus something or someone.
Oh, boy.
So this may flop or this may do well. If you know the answer, say your name.
All right.
You only
right.
You only get,
right.
Yeah, you only get one chance to answer.
Can I answer as Kaiser Soze?
Whatever, as long as I recognize your voice.
Okay.
Because that's Heather, right? Good.
Yes.
I have about 20, so basically the idea would be whoever gets to five first, whoever has the most by the end, and if there is a tie, I do have a tiebreaker or two.
Nice.
Some of these are more obscure than others. So are you ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. 1956. Extraterrestrials traveling in high spec.
Richard.
Richard.
Earth versus the flying saucers.
That is. Oh, good. We're off to a good start.
Nice.
Well done.
Number two, 1966. A vampire travels to the American West, intent on making a beautiful ranch owner his next victim.
Richard.
Richard.
This is Dracula versus Billy the Kid, or Billy the Kid versus Dracula?
Yeah, I'll give you a yes. Billy the Kid versus Dracula.
Right.
Somebody's going to get to five real fast.
I know.
I love it.
It's awesome.
1979. A workaholic ad exec's wife,
Richard.
Lisa.
I'm sorry.
Richard.
I think I might know this one.
I'm going to say Kramer versus Kramer.
Yes! Yes, that's what I thought too.
I promise not to chime in on the next two.
Go ahead, Richard.
Yes, we love it.
Yes.
1990. When a hypochondriac learns that he is dying, he accepts an offer to throw himself into a gigantic lava field.
Heather.
What
is? Oh, it's not Jeopardy. Joe versus Volcano.
That's right.
You did that one too. Yay!
Woo-hoo. It's exciting.
1996, the true story of a controversial pornography publisher.
Richard.
And Richard.
Oh.
The People versus Larry Flint.
Yes.
Didn't he just pass away this year, too?
He did.
I think so.
I thought he was dead for a long time, so it was shocking to me.
This is easier than I thought. I think people think of me as someone who gets complicated games.
This is fun. I'm enjoying it anyway.
Yeah, this is good. I like it.
Well, we can keep going past these if you want to hear some of the others. But,
oh, yeah.
2003. A nightmare pedophile and a summer camp serial killer return to terrorize the teenage population.
Richard.
I think.
Go ahead, Jeanette.
Yeah. Who is it? Freddy versus Jason?
That's right.
Oh!
That's how we play Jeopardy at all.
Right. Yeah.
2004. During an archaeological expedition on Voivodtoya Island in Antarctica, a team of archaeologists...
Oh, Jeanette!
Jeanette.
AVP. What is Alien vs.
Oh, good job!
Nice.
Yes.
Yes, if you want to... we're at Heather 1, Richard 4, Jeanette 2. 2007. The tale of two socially awkward misfits and the strange ways they try to find love through revenge on high school bullies, burgers, and video games.
I feel like I know this.
Yeah.
You probably do. I'll give another hint. I believe it's New Zealand. Oh, everybody nope. Give up?
Yeah.
I do.
Eagle versus shark.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Man, I never saw that one, but I've heard of it, yes.
2010. In a magically realistic version of Toronto, a young man must defeat his new girlfriend, Jeanette.
Scott Pilgrim versus the World?
Yes.
Which is getting a 10-year anniversary release this year.
Oh, dear, I'm getting old.
Wow, 10 years already? Good Lord.
I know. I'm way ahead of you on all of those. I'm at 50-year anniversary. Oh, sure. 2010. Two affable hillbillies are on vacation.
Heather. Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
That's right.
I love that movie so much.
Yes.
These college kids keep killing themselves all over my property.
2012. A gang of bank robbers fight their way out of a zombie-infested London.
Oh.
Oh, I wish I had seen this movie. This sounds like fun.
I know. I probably have, and I just can't recall.
It sort of came and went. Nobody?
Nope. No.
I don't think so.
Cockneys versus zombies.
Cockneys versus zombies.
Yeah, it sort of came and went.
All right.
Yeah. 2012. While the Civil War rages on, the president must undertake an even more daunting task, destroying the Confederate undead.
Well, I know what the movie is.
Yeah, I didn't think
Why do I not have...
It doesn't have a verses in the title. Yeah. Jeanette?
But I'm thinking of it doesn't. So I might be thinking of the right thing.
Oh, yeah. There's two of them. That's right.
Yes.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Oh.
Never mind. I withdraw my name.
This one you could probably guess at and get it.
I feel like I...
Richard,
could.
Abraham Lincoln versus zombies.
That's right. And Richard wins.
Fantastic.
Well done. Well done. That was fun.
I will give you the tiebreaker so you can fight on that. And this is not a movie. It is a cartoon. From 1969, a fawn-like creature finds he's no match for a legendary Japanese monster.
Bambi versus Godzilla.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Fantastic.
Have you not seen Bambi versus Godzilla, guys?
No, but
no.
I do.
Oh, you have?
Oh, YouTube? YouTube. You'll love it.
That's going to happen. That's delightful.
Well, excellent.
That was fantastic. Great game.
Excellent. Thank you. I enjoyed that very much. And you save the extras, and we'll do it again.
No, probably not, because, you know, there are very, very few movies with
that have
verses. Until you get to things like Ghidorah meets Mega Octopussy or something.
I was
waiting
on Ballistic X versus Sever.
That's one I was trying to remember the name of. I knew there was one of those.
You would have gotten that one.
Yeah,
that,
absolutely. Love
it was
that movie.
There and I didn't think anybody would get it.
Yeah.
But yes, I did have that one. So, but yeah, after the ones I have, you get, you know, all these Mothra versus, you know, Mega.
Those would have been tough because you'd get all the monsters confused.
Right. So, yeah. And they get more and more obscure.
Yeah.
Well, as the winner of today's game, I'll promote first. On my site, I have the review of Godzilla versus Kong. I get them backwards all the time. Cause Kong should have been first billed. It was his movie. Like you said before, Godzilla was a supporting player in this film. But Godzilla versus Kong. And I also have a review up for a film that I enjoyed quite a bit from the previous week, Nobody, with Bob Odenkirk, which is basically... Yeah. You know, John Wick with a different guy. You know, it's made by the same people. It's if you liked the John Wick films, I can't see any reason why you wouldn't enjoy this one. So go and enjoy. Heather, what are you promoting this week? You got something on the
MILFcast? Actually do. I have some kind of big stuff, actually. So the MILFcast is no longer the Man I Love Films podcast. We have a new podcast. It's you might get confused. It's called the MILFcast because we have changed it to the Man I Love Fun podcast. We are mostly just branching out from film into all kinds of media. We're going to do music, TV. I'm really into anime too, so I'm really hoping I can drive Kai crazy talking about anime. And we're going to be doing live streaming when we do our shows now too. So we'll be on Twitch. I'll post all the stuff on our socials. So if you guys want to check it out, we're at the MILFcast on both Instagram and Facebook. And this Sunday we're going to have our first live stream. It'll be Sunday. It'll be 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific with all those California folk, and we'll have a music guest prime time. So
that's April 11th?
Yes, indeed.
All right. All right. Howard, what are you promoting this week?
Well, I've been a little busy, so bear with me. Today I have uploaded the latest episode of Pop Art, where I talked with writer, director, producer Keith Hartman, and we discussed Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse and Coherence. Both movies are about, have multiverses or parallel universes as the main part of their plot. Today, I'm going to be recording the next episode of Pop Art with Kelly Campbell of The Vikings, of the television series The Vikings, where we will be discussing Something's Gotta Give and, Set in Fear, which are about female playwrights and their love lives. And then the next one will be with Amanda Kirkham, Richard's daughter, where we will be discussing Down with Love and Pillow Talk, two movies about the Battle of the Sexes. I recently was a guest on the Real Short Box podcast, where we talked about existentialism in comic books and comic book movies. And yesterday I was a guest on the 80s movie Montage, where we talked about Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid.
Oh, fun. Fun stuff. Jeanette, what are you promoting this week?
Oh, nothing much. Just you can find my reviews over at jwardadventures.blogspot.com. Just posted one on Moxie, which I really enjoyed. And Boss Level. I'm going to continue to tell people to watch Boss Level. I really enjoyed that. So there you go.
And on the LAM site, Acting School 101 with Movie Rob, Russell Crowe is the featured actor this month. We apparently have a new Lamberty up, and Heather should know something about that. I have not listened to it yet, but it sounds like it was a little bit of a chaos. which is appropriate when Jay's hosting.
Yes. it was fun.
I'm all good with that. And I'm going to announce the winner of the Movie of the Month franchise for our show here in April. And Howard will be returning to us because Howard, the Thin Man movie franchise, won.
Wow.
And,
I think it was when I shared the picture of Asta and Myrna Loy and whatever his name is, and said, Asta, ask that you vote for.
That got a lot of votes. Good way to promote. Good way to promote. I think we had a tie between the Mummy franchise and the Final Destination franchise for second place.
The Mummy franchise.
Maybe those will come back at another time, but I'm looking forward. We've got five films in the Thin Man
series?
Six. Okay, six. I'm looking forward to seeing them all. I'm just wondering if I can see them all in the next 2 weeks. Well, we'll figure it out.
That's what I was going to ask. What is the date on that, April?
The franchise movie of the month is... Sorry, it is April 17th.
Great.
So, and I do have people scheduled for it. I need to contact them all.
Are any from England?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Apparently, it's almost impossible to see these films in England.
Well, you know what? I was going to have Jay if Final Destination won, but since he's not going to be on there, you are in that spot, and we should be having a couple of other people. I got to make sure one of them is up for it. They were sponsoring another franchise, but they may step in. Otherwise, we're complete on that show, and we're still filling in on upcoming shows. I didn't quite get enough people to do a show on Justice League. Once again, if anybody is interested in doing a special show on that, we could do it. We'd have to record on a different date.
Maybe. I haven't finished watching it yet. I'm still on part five. It's such a slog.
Yes, it is.
I put it off after 30 minutes. I tried twice, and at 30 minutes I said, oh, my God, shoot me.
Did you make it to the part where the Icelandic lady started singing as Aquaman slow motion walks into the ocean and they sniff his sweater? Because I cannot get over that.
Yeah.
All right, we're not going to start that show today.
Okay, sorry, my mistake.
No. if you get through it and you want to talk about it, let me know, because I had three other people that said they were kind of interested in doing it, and we'd have to record on a Saturday instead of a Sunday.
Oh, okay.
And I think maybe we need to do it in the next week or two.
There are people who just love this. They think it's the greatest film since Citizen Kane.
Do they, or are they just louder than everyone else?
The only people I'm seeing on Facebook. But there are people that just love this, and I think the people who don't like it just don't want to be bothered.
I held a gun to DJ's head, and he still wouldn't do it, so there's a bullet hole there in his head right now. So
I'm working on it. I hope to have it finished, so yeah, maybe I can step up for that.
Well, let me know.
All right.
That's going to be it for today. We'll be back next week. I think next week is our Oscar preview show. So those of you who are following the Oscars this year, be sure to tune in and make sure that you listen to what people who haven't seen any of the movies have to say about the movies that they haven't seen. Because that's what I'll be doing.
Absolutely, me too. Opinions on stuff I haven't watched.
I'm up on all the best picture nominees that are on streaming channels. That's it.
Yeah, I may have to catch up with a few things this week just to be able to say something occasionally.
My friend in Chicago, who has both his shots, said he spent one weekend seeing all the Best Picture nominees at the theater. He was so happy.
I appreciate celebrating your full vaccination that way. I think that's a good way to do it.
That's a good way to do it. I wish AMC was doing their Best Picture showcase so I could catch up on all of them. But we'll just have to see what happens. All right, well, I'd like to thank my guest today. Heather, thank you for showing up.
Thank you for having me on. I love being here promoting Godzilla, CEO and boss of the monsters.
Howard, once again, appreciate your participation, and we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Great, thank you.
And Jeanette, thank you for being here with us, and next week.
You got it. Hashtag Team Godzilla.
All right. Until next time, everybody, take it easy.
You've been listening to the Lambcast. If you have an idea for a show or would like to join us on the Lambcast, Contact us at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Find us on Facebook, just search for Lambcast, or on Twitter, at Lambcast. The Lamb site can be found at largeassmovieblogs.com, and please head over to iTunes to leave us a review.
Go to hell. Go to hell. Go to hell. Go to hell. Oh no. Go to hell. Go to hell. Go to hell. Go to hell. Oh no. Sheep go to heaven. Goats go to hell.
You're still here? It's over. Go home.
Go.